This week on RSBNB Update, what everyone's been waiting for is finally on the way, a skilling boss. We take our first look at Krosis and run through its rewards, including some shiny new magic armor and a new pair of overpowered arrows. This is RSBNB Update, episode 848, recorded Thursday, September 23rd, 2021. Pointy sticks be sus. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tennis, welcome back. It feels like it's been a while since we did one of these shows, eh?
It really does, but there was no interruption for the listeners out there.
No, no. That's because we put out that Lore Diggers episode with Questscaping and Sirion last week about Sentistan. I figured that's going to be the best week to do it until we get into October, and with that, because of that, we just went for it. Hopefully everybody has enjoyed that. I know I enjoyed producing and hosting that one, but of course, we're moving on to the next God Wars front, and joining us to discuss some of the reward info and some of the early info on the Krosis front is Thaxi. Welcome back.
Hey, it's your buddy the Hot Take Machine, back for another round.
And numbers and spreadsheets, too.
Always. We got them tonight. Hopefully not too many.
Yeah,
mostly just arrows.
You know what I've been thinking a lot recently, and the spreadsheet you showed me earlier in the week really exemplified this, was that RuneScape is the spreadsheet game. If you wanted to teach a young one how to do spreadsheets, you could tell them to play RuneScape and point them to a specific part of the game and be like, go make a spreadsheet on this.
Yeah, that's totally going to grow the base, Shane. You know what really makes kids interested? Spreadsheets. Come on, come play RuneScape and learn how to do math.
I learned how to do lots of programming and whatnot because of RuneScape.
True.
But anyways, the Krosis front. This is the front related to the Elder God Bick, and it's nothing like we've ever seen before because there's no NPCs involved in this. In fact, everybody.
Well, there's one giant dragon.
There were.
There were NPCs there, but the only one left, and I think I caught this that it was being narrated on the live stream. It was being narrated by Vindicta, right?
Gorvek.
Okay.
Gorvek. The dragon.
That's interesting. That's interesting because I just got the Gorvek pet. But more on that later. And this, of course, we've been kind of bipping and bobbing around the entire claim to fame on this one. But this is RuneScape's first skilling boss.
Yay! Bum, bum, bum. Yeah. Just when you thought it couldn't happen. See?
Yeah.
How long have we waited?
Yeah, they just gave us flowers just because, Shane. Do you understand that? We got chocolates out of nowhere delivered at work just because they loved us. It's a good week.
I could think of better weeks in RuneScape history, but nonetheless, are we looking forward to this?
Are we looking forward to this?
Yeah.
Are we looking forward to this?
Come on, amp it up. Amp it up.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so excited, Shane.
We were requesting this 3 months ago, and it's here.
And what I'm wondering behind this is that was it pressure from the community that led them to eventually do a skilling boss? Was it the logical thing to do? Or did everybody just guess correctly of what they were going to be doing and get on that hype train?
Well, I think it's all of those things, right? I mean, obviously, yeah. This had to been this. We know they've been working on Elder God Wars. We know that this has been a concept. I would think that a skilling boss was probably a component or a leg of the stool that they always wanted to be in there. I think this just happened to be the right time to bring it into the game. because you as you heard from one of the developers, you know, they had to study how to do it right for us. And we'll see if that, you know, we'll see how it all turns out, but I'm really hopeful and super excited. And,
one really interesting thing about this one is that if you go back to when Elder God Wars, the entire saga known as Elder God Wars, was first being announced, there was a live stream with Mod Warden and Mod Osborne on it, and they effectively said that it's not all going to be, you know, killing. There's going to be stuff for skillers in there, and we thought that that was, of course, Sentistan archaeology, but looking at this thing from an entire macro level, it couldn't have just been that.
I heard that as skilling, boss. I didn't even think about the archaeology side of it. I'm like, ooh, they're throwing in. I thought they were going to put something in for lower level combat, which I guess the Archplay sword did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something for higher level combat, and something for skillers, and something for questers. They've got a little bit in there with us for the lore. They're doing pretty good.
Yeah, and with that, it's actually being developed by what we could call an all-star team of J-Mods. We have Mod Jank, who led the design for it. Then the two principal content developers for this were Mod Shrew and Mod Sponge, and I think it was Mod Sponge who worked on the Rex Matriarchs project as well.
Yeah. Yep.
So like Mod Jack is like Iron Man, right? Of the Avengers. It's like coordinating the team, and then what is Sponge kind of like Vision or something maybe?
It's a team. It's a team. I'm sure they all have wonderful levels of influence.
They have all come together and made this super awesome skilling boss.
Well,
I can't.
I'm gonna hold you back because you just said it's a super awesome skilling boss and we haven't killed it yet.
We'll never kill it.
Okay, we haven't beaten it back yet.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes next week. For now, the rewards are interesting,
and that's the thing.
And we have a skilling boss.
Yeah, I mean, it's mere existence. It's progress, Shane.
It really is. Existence. It really is, and the number of people I've seen in the PVM community wonder if there's going to be Reaper tasks for this, if there's going to be boss drop logs and everything else you find in every other boss, and the answer to that is yes.
Yes.
And honestly, I think it's just a great thing for skillers to have something that is super high-intensity content. I mean, currently you've got Game Hunter, but in terms of, you know, for like PVM, the harder the PVM, the higher the reward. For skilling, it's somewhat true, like Slayer and some stuff can earn you more, or Clue Scrolls can earn you more. But there's no, like, I'm going to pay a ton of attention and get a ton of skilling XP and a ton of product.
You know, there used to be, but that's a story for another day.
and earn a ton of money. And this maybe might fill that high intensity, high input, high profit niche. I'm hopeful for the skillers.
And the skills in question, we haven't said those yet. They're going to be woodcutting, mining, fishing, and hunter.
A little bit of construction.
I am most looking forward to the woodcutting aspect on this because I've gone on diatribes before here on the show how woodcutting needs something at the higher level.
I'm really excited that they picked the. I think these are the right kinds of skills to do a skilling boss with. A couple of them I already have 120s in, but you know, I still there's plenty to chew on.
Yeah.
We're talking about a skilling. When people said that, Shane, I'm like, whatever, dude, it's never happening. We're never getting a skill.
And I was actually talking with Sirion on Sunday, and I said, people had better be ready to be disappointed tomorrow.
Well, the other thing to consider with these is that Hunter aside, three of these are in the lowest five skills in terms of XP per hour in the highest bracket.
You don't need to tell me about that. The person who wants 120 woodcutting and best I can do is
some of the hardest pets to get, and like these are skills that really could use some upgrades, and
yeah,
we got them. So we'll talk about it.
You'll need level 88 to access the respective skill. to access the standard nodes, and then the enhanced nodes will require 92. But there are no requirements to phase Krosis itself, though they do recommend having at least 80 in woodcutting, mining, fishing, hunter, and construction. And the interesting part about this, I said killed, but you corrected me, is that you don't kill it. You beat it back to a point where it retreats to a dormant state. And that's going to be the objective here with this. Presumably, as your skill, as it attacks you, your skills will get sapped and they'll go down. And that's when you and your team need to pull back. Speaking of that, the maximum number of people you can bring into this is 50, 5-0. They recommend 8. They say 4 will be probably doable once people figure out the mechanics. And they don't think 1 will be possible. But, you know, anytime they say something won't be possible, somebody will out there will always find a way.
Yeah, they have no... Shane, they have no idea what skillers can do. They have never, ever, like, saw the kinds of craziness that I've seen people do. I mean, with Metrodomes and the whole...
oh, my God.
I'm telling you, dude. Yeah, it'll... They're going to do some crazy stuff. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, and this launches on Monday the 27th, which it feels like it was a short amount of time between this and the Glacier launching, but I'm pleased that they're keeping this pace up. I almost said the bad C word there.
Well, yes, and I'm sure we'll talk about some comments later in the live stream about some concerns. Keeping this kind of pace, but I don't think that, number one, it's apples and oranges, and that's not how game development works. Like, things are worked on simultaneously.
And that's what they did you know, with this, is that everything is being worked on with this simultaneously.
Yeah, so I mean, I wouldn't anticipate any more or less problems than you would normally anticipate on a day one release, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
I think it should be fine.
Yeah.
On the idea of soloing it, I mean, the only comparison we have, and they did say it would be different, is the old school skilling bosses. And those are designed in a way that you can solo them. It just takes you more than half an hour to do it. And this, you know, may be that you need high intensity, or you need, you know, tick perfect manipulation, or those kind of things. But I mean, from the things that they showed us on the live stream, there was in the chat box at one point they had a little thing going on about the actual mechanics of the fight, and it looks super neat.
No, interesting. So, I didn't catch that. What did it say?
It effectively said, there was Gorbeck was narrating into the chat box. Right. And effectively saying, you know, it's woken back up. You're going to need to do is gather from the statues of the four ancient warriors. Each of them have killed some large monster. So in the corner of the picture, you could see there was an Arachsite spider. It was grown over with fungus in one of the corners of the arena. And then you, whatever, from something that you gather from this, you add it, you reawaken these statues back, and the spirits of these four ancient warriors will then calm the boss.
Fascinating.
So it sounds and with call outs, I'm all over this, Shane.
Maybe there'll be hot spots. Maybe, you know, we don't know anything other than, like, there's a lot of mechanics we don't know yet, right? Like, are some of these gathering hotspots going to be highlighted so you get things from them faster, or it's going to be safer there or more dangerous? We don't know anything about this, but we know that that's how the fight is going to go, is that you'll gather stuff from each corner of the arena from the corpse of a large monster, and then use that to repair a statue, which will then defeat the boss. See.
And that's simple enough when you think about it, and the one thing I was hoping we would not see from this is more tower defense, because I know how that caused you problems, Tannis.
Don't know.
That's not... I mean... But how is that skilling?
Right.
As we know it in RuneScape, you know? I mean, that sounds, right. That's more minigame, sure, but it's not really what we know as skilling. I mean, I could see this being... We have some elements, right? Think of whack-a-mole at the deep-sea fishing area. There are some kind of examples, and we've talked about even others. If you look at pre-nerf Hunter, that was one that you had your timing on. And then, of course, you know, on double XPs, you have your Guthix Shrine memory, you know, divination that's going on down there. I could see this being very similar to that, but that's actually, that would be okay, because since you have to have a group anyway, all I would need is someone calling out what was in that chat.
Yeah, and
I could be all over it.
And we will probably try this next week. And they did actually telegraph a bit of this in the blog post with this. There's the four corners you mentioned, Thaxi, about the four graves belonging to mighty heroes of the Second Age and their trophy kills with the fungus growing all over them. After that, you use your woodcutting, mining, fishing, and hunter to clear the fungal matter. That will reduce Croesus's strength, but after that, the fungus will grow back, and although you can slow it using the rotten fungus you've already collected, you need a permanent solution, which is to restore the statue of the four heroes using the materials you gather during the encounter. And once repaired, you can pray at the statue to subdue Croesus. And once Croesus is subdued, you'll gain access to the core fungus. And when that is destroyed, Croesus will be restored to its dormant state. So the boss is all laid out right there in the blog post with that. Mm-hmm. The question is,
we know everything that we need to do. Know nothing about how the boss will stop us.
Exactly.
That's the scary part.
And they
mentioned
skill drain. Obviously, for a regular boss fight, you bring food, but are we thinking that we're going to need to use, like, restores or super restores for this?
It makes sense, but I wonder.
But I also see in the image directly below that skill drain, I think you've probably got it pulled up, it looks like there's another purple adrenaline bar underneath this person. Maybe you have a I don't want to call it a health bar, but maybe a stamina type bar that depletes as you get hit by boss mechanics. It will render you infected potentially or something.
And then there might be a way to replenish that in battle.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, again, we don't know anything about these mechanics, but
It probably doesn't go down if you are at the right node that you're supposed to be at. I'm guessing.
Or not standing in the smoke or the whatever it is. Yeah, we'll find out. It's big news. It's a big change, and I think it'll be good for the game. So,
yeah, and you know, there's so much that always goes on in RS, and so much of it fits within cookie cutter content of past years. And anytime we break that mold, like happened with archaeology, and is probably going to happen with this, that's definitely a good thing.
So. Archaeology, give me more.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Maybe we could get a killing boss based off that.
Never
know.
Dig deep. Yeah. Ore is coming.
All right, like so just a couple notes here from the live stream. It's the first time they did a live stream featuring another content creator, I think. This week they had Makeru on. He has some questions. One of them was that, is this being released too soon? Given that the bugs that exist on the Glacier front. And the answer to this was that fronts are developed simultaneously and have their own teams to look over the bugs. We knew this, of course, in the past. And because of some of the engine work and a week off, that's why the Glacier bugs have, in effect, been delayed. And any of the fixes that people are wanting for the Popsicle should work their way into the Croesus front.
I really felt of two minds on that, because, like, on one hand, I understand wanting to make sure that something is fixed, you know, that you don't have stuff lingering out there. But at the same time, I thought it felt a little impatient.
I think we can just boil it down.
Brand new.
Right, and I'd be happy with just boiling that down to the different perspectives of, you know, knowing how this kind of dev cycle works versus how it doesn't. Tanis, you've been exposed to that a long time because of everything that we've talked about here on the show from my perspective and Sirion's perspectives and not, but not everybody has that perspective. But
yeah, I mean, and that's why I say, like, I understand, like, if you don't know that or if you don't have a lot of, you know, experience with that, I understand the concern.
Yeah,
of, and hey, I don't want it to linger. Because we have ran into that, right? I remember the unfinished business and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's legitimate, right. But
as long as it didn't come across in the wrong way and push certain members of the community into a position where they become even more skeptical of what Jagex does. Because we have to remember, of course, they're only human. And
well,
I think we have a record here. Telling it like it is, giving them credit when credit is due, and saying when something goes wrong horribly.
Oh, if something goes wrong next week, we'll be the first to tell you. Yeah. I'll be in tears. You'll know something happened because you'll just hear sobbing in the background.
Oh no!
But I don't think that's how it's going to be.
Yeah, and you know, for what it's worth, I think all the bosses, Karapak and the Glacier, have come out relatively well. There haven't been anything that shipped with either of them that wasn't fixed within a few hours that caused...
Fun to compensate for the bugs. I am
exactly.
Okay with this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm actually just going to mention this now. I saw this in a different source somewhere. I forget who said it. And I don't know when this is on the way, but they are working on a way to... get the passive benefits of the Pontifex Ring so you don't get stunned at Karapak and you have that extra prayer protection boost at the Glacier without wearing the ring. They are working on something like that to have a passive effect at a higher cost. I don't know when that will arrive, though.
You know where you don't need all these funky combat ring switches, Shane? A skilling boss!
Yeah. Woo! And I'm wondering, should we... But should we bring our skilling outfits, right? I mean...
We're wearing them in the trailer. Of course, they also had somebody using an onslaught under a death swiftness in one of the trailers, so I'm maybe not putting a ton of faith in that. For the record, onslaught does not get extra damage from death swiftness.
Yeah, so don't overload while you're mining. That doesn't actually help you that.
I mean, technically having additional strength bonus does, but it's like 0.2%.
Yeah.
I remember when that mining rework came out, people were using overloads for it.
Mm-hmm.
But, a very expensive 0.2%.
But the Dragon Battle Axe works just as well.
Oh, that's Shane pulling out the old content. Shane with the dead content. Hello.
Dragon Battle Axe isn't dead. I think some people put those in EOFs, don't they?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Seems like people use them. But the adrenaline crystals in Warrior's Retreat because it's free adrenaline, free stats.
Okay, that's a better way then. I could have sworn someone told me they put a battle axe in the EOF, but anyways.
Could.
Some more tidbits from the live stream here. In the most recent God Chatter, Saren said that she used her powers to get guards from Varrok and Falador to come and defend, and they have already been massacred by Bic.
Well, they haven't been massacred by Bic yet, but on Monday they will have been massacred by Bic. Oops.
Jack also
said that
they also said that Bic doesn't care for intelligent life. And has called this ancient monster in from the Second Age.
I think we will talk about this when we hit the God Banter, but that line in particular is interesting to me. But again, later.
This means that this is not intelligent, like it literally is the blob. It's just a force.
There's a couple lines from Saren at the very end of the most recent God Banter
that are relating to the feeling she's getting.
We'll get there.
The goal for this front is to create a front that's purely focused around skilling, so that someone with level 1 combat stats should be able to still engage with Elder God Wars content.
Yay!
And as well, with this front, the Glacier front and the Noden front will be updated to have their defenders pushed back and more supplies brought in.
Oh.
So.
Danger, Will Robinson.
Things aren't going as well as they seem, despite how many kills we have on the Glacier and Karapak. The goal is to ultimately create an ecosystem that will benefit those doing this boss encounter. The fungus will be able to be fed to player-owned farm animals.
Really?
And they said, you don't know what's going to come out of the animal when you do that.
Huh.
In other words, it's just cheaper. Which fungus has gotten a lot cheaper, but I suppose zygomites are still expensive to raise, so
yeah.
Cool. All
right.
Then this was a good question that was asked. What does doing a skilling boss mean as a designer? And the answer to this one, this is something I'd really like to pick away with, is that the identity of the old school skilling boss and the RS3 skilling boss had to be two different things. But the idea is to keep the same level of intensity, but not the same level of risk as other bosses, which means there is no death, but there is indeed losing.
Have either of you done the old school skilling bosses?
No, I don't have an old school account.
Okay. I've done all three of them. I've done the Temperos, the Wintertot, and Zalcano. And we'll do a quick TLDR on how all of those work. Sorry, old school people, if this is too simple, if I'm missing a lot of things, but the shortest version of all of this is you use your gathering skills and your processing skills. Whatever, with something you make from that, the boss loses health or stamina or similar. And that's the goal of the boss. And the danger to you is that if you're standing in the wrong place, you take damage. A couple of these have safe death. I think they might actually all have safe death. But, also the volcano on Fossil Island. Same thing, though. It's you gather, you process, and you try to avoid standing on the bad ground. It sounds like they're trying to do the RS3 thing, where movement abilities are more important, maybe, for this?
We didn't really see much of that from the trailer, though.
But I'm trying to think about how they're making the identity different, because that seems like gather thing, process thing, use thing, avoid bad ground. Seems to be the idea. I mean, I don't know.
But I think that's because... It's because that's still a PVM perspective, right? True. So you think of it like as...
Let's be very clear. This is still PVM. This is not bossing, but this is PVM.
This is... but you're thinking about like you're being penalized in some way. But in skilling, a lot of times, the idea that you could get all the way down and lose, so you lost that time, that's just as punishing as losing money.
Oh no, for sure. The money that from deaths isn't, you know, is just a side thing, and it's expensive. But it's, you know, the risk is small. Most people don't die too frequently, and I don't know. I mean, I guess the difference here is that they just don't want people like it's. I'm trying to think about how this is different from the OSRS version. Like what they could do that mechanically is different from OSRS. And the only thing I can think about really is the movement abilities. But we'll. I guess, you know, again, we're theorizing and we'll just see on Monday. There's no point.
Yeah, there's no point in theorizing too much about that now. Well, we already talked about the group sizes, max of 50, recommended 8, but probably doable with 4. There will be public instances that somebody will be able to join, and their whole goal with this is to make it easy.
I want to talk about this.
All right.
Like this. This is amazing. My perfect world hope for this is that it sounds like they're guaranteeing public instances, which is to say, if you just go to a world and click enter instance instead of create instance, it will just drop you into however many other people are on that world. The only thing they have to do then is to make sure that the people that want to do this are all on the same worlds. So, like, perfect world for me is I would love to have... We'll see how popular this is. If the XP rates are great on it and the rewards are great on it, maybe we get 2 US worlds, 2 EU worlds, and an Australia world? Or, you know, something in that, like, 3 to 5 world range to, like, really group people together for this so that you never need to find a team, but there's always just an active world running. Maybe you won't get as much contribution because there's 20 people there. or, you know, less people at night, more people in the day, whatever it be. But you'll get fast and consistent. Like, that's my hope for this, is that they've make instance worlds that can then stay alive so people don't have to do team forming.
Yeah.
Because as a person who does raids, team forming can be a nightmare.
Oh, I remember how bad that grouping system was when it came out.
It's not much better.
Yeah, it's not I hope they don't use that for it.
They shouldn't. There's no reason to.
In my ideal world, you just click the gate, and then you would be popped into an instance with it, and it wouldn't matter what world you were on, because they already have that same kind of tech for things like the Clan Citadels and whatnot.
You think that is challenging? Because what if it's a weekend or a DXP and it's a great XP rate and suddenly there's 400 people there and only 50 in that instance? I think they kind of need to make multiple, make it available on every world. Just say, everybody that wants to do this, if there's not enough people on your world, go to this world and there will be enough people. And spread out enough worlds to make that viable. Like, if there's five worlds, it'll be like, you know, Castle Wars was forever ago, where there's really only one world that's active. But if there were a ton of people, you could have five active worlds.
And this goes back to
what
we heard when archaeology came out, making the game more social, because when that came out, everybody loved the fact everybody was playing together.
Well, and like when this comes out, I imagine if there's actually public instances, every world will have a running public instance, in addition to any instances being run by clans or Discord groups or whatever. They're like, we want our people in our group, but if somebody else wants to join us, I guess that's cool. Like, it seems like, we'll see.
I mean, we'll see, because also, I mean, the smaller the group, the more the reward. So
they didn't say that, though.
They just said drops in XP are based on your contributions.
They said the scaling was, I think the word is parabolic, but it's like, you know, at like eight people, the thing will have proportionally more health than it did at four people. And that proportional increase decreases the more people you get, if that makes sense. So, like, adding a 50th person will add a smaller amount of health than adding a fifth person. So, in that sense, you do get fewer contribution points if you're not on your ball. You also then get faster kills. So, the hope is that it just balances out to a point. That would be my hope for how this is balanced. We'll see if that works in practice, or if it's actually just that once you get good at it, you are most efficient going with four people. But
we'll see.
I guess we'll see.
And like we say, speculation. The main thing, of course, we want to talk about
the game
is the rewards. And I'm just going to throw us into that segment right now and say that there's new arrows that will require Elder Shafts.
Elder Logs are worth more money. I maybe hope they drop from this boss, but if they don't, oh my gosh, they are about to be an amazing moneymaker.
Right, and you know what I've been thinking of doing for a long time is actually just doing that as my 120 woodcutting method. I just haven't had the motivation or reason to do that.
Have you looked at the XP rates on those trees? It's bad.
I know. And it's
great money. I mean, it's $2 or $3 million an hour right now.
Exactly.
And, well, it was before Wednesday. Now it's probably like $6 to $8 million an hour.
Yeah, and that's the problem with woodcutting, is that you got just methods that are all over the place. And it honestly doesn't make sense as a skill at the high end. There's people like me who would like it to go to 120. But
I was
going to
bring
this
up with the skilling offhands, but it's relevant now. The woodcutting...
Yes.
Like, high-level mining, you can get good XP rates and get ore. Woodcutting, you cannot get high-level woodcutting rates and get wood.
Exactly.
Like, all of the things, the crystallizing, Cadia logs, crystal trees, bamboo. Like, none of this is stuff you can sell.
Yeah.
And the best stuff that you can sell is, like, in the like 50,000 to 90,000 experience per hour range. It's so bad. So,
yeah, and we'll talk more about that with the skilling offhands, because I want those.
We need to talk
opinions
about those.
Yeah. All right. Rewards. Thaxi put this wonderful segment together on the rewards. We know there's gonna be a pet.
Here's the picture of it, right at the top of the rewards there. And, looks like a little granny to me.
And what I said, I hope the pet's name is going into this is Little Sus.
Horrible.
All right, so where are we going first with this?
I think we just go down the rewards in order. I do want to talk about the arrows last because I think that that's more to unpack. But I think we just go down the rewards in order.
Take an arrow start to with the armor. For that?
Well, we're taking arrows to everywhere, Shane. There. Whew.
All right, so Crypt Bloom Armor, Tier 90 Magic armor. Tank Armor with a set effect. I'll read this out, then you can talk about what's special about it in your opinion. The two-piece set effect, incoming magic damage will be reduced by 12%, and incoming melee damage reduced by 8%. The three-piece set, incoming magic damage is reduced by a further 6%. I'm assuming this is additive, so it'll go 12 to 18, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Melee damage is reduced by a further 4%, and these bonuses are doubled if your primary spell type is Earth.
We'll get back to that.
Okay. For four pieces, every time you take damage, you have a 6% chance to infect your target with Croesus's death spores, which will increase the damage they take from behind by 10%. So a different kind of flank. And with all five pieces equipped, you get all of the above, and when you fall below 20% HP, you gain a fungal shield, which scales with your armor rating and defense level for 15 seconds. The shield has a 120-second cooldown.
I don't know what to think about that one. That will have to be something we evaluate next week. Let's talk about this armor. First blush. For me, without doing the high-end PVM take on this yet, I mean, for the this armor is for the most hardcore of the skillers. They now have access to close to best-in-slot armor to animate their Animate dead tank, their way to learning bossing, getting through AFK Slayer, or challenging quest boss, whatever it is. And I think that's great.
Because this is on par with Acto, right?
Yes, and we'll talk about that comparison. They said that in terms of health and armor values, it's on par with Acto. And one of the things I meant to look up, which is truly unimportant, is that the health bonus on Acto is higher than the health bonus on regular Raid's armor. I think it actually has tier 92 health bonus. Unimportant. It's a small extra little bit. If this has it, that's cool. It doesn't need to be exclusive to it. Depending on how expensive this is, I think it's going to be a great thing for learning mechanics at a new boss, because you get much less punished if you're using Animate Dead Tanking with high-level armor like this. And I think the other thing to talk about is that three-piece set effect, that extra Earth spells. That is an interesting one, and they explained this by saying, yes, we gave you really powerful fire and water spells, but if you want to tank stuff, Earth. And if you remember a few weeks ago, they threw a nice little patch note in there that they had increased the damage of the Aurora spells to scale up to 99%. Well, the Earth Aurora, Emerald Aurora, the passive effect on that spell is that it stacks up to 5 times, and each one of those stacks decreases damage taken by 1%. So effectively, this is saying that if you're using Emerald Aurora, we'll give you the 5% damage reduction from Emerald Aurora, but we'll also give you an additional 6% magic reduction and 4% melee reduction, which is just more incentive to use that spell. So that now becomes, if you really want to be tanky, that's the spell you
use. That's 23% magic right there.
Correct. And they don't, I don't believe they stack additively in that way. I think they probably stack multiplicatively.
Okay, but still, that's a good
22
number.
And change.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty healthy. On top of tier 90 armor, so 99 defense will give you 9.9% reduction. Tier 99 armor will give you another 9%, or tier 90 armor will give you another 9% reduction. And tier 90 shield will give you another 9% reduction. Those three are additive. So that's 27.9% reduction. I mean, yeah. Plus the 5%. With the 5% reduction on top of that, with the 24% reduction on top of that, just wearing this armor and using that spell will give you a pretty hefty 40-some% damage reduction off the cuff without you know, I mean, given you're wielding a shield, so you also have defenses and other things going on. That it's hefty. This is definitely great. Going to be good tank armor. But the question kind of for, I guess, our high tier PVM listeners, the handful that are out there, the people that are interested, the comparison we'll make for this obviously is the Raids armor sets. And the issue, of course, with Raids armor sets is that they're best in slot, but they're only from relatively challenging group content. Especially the Octo version takes basically a full year of raiding, unless you get lucky. Usually about 100 to 150 raids to get a full set of Octo armor. And that's a high, high barrier to entry for armor that you don't use a lot of places.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Raids armor really quick. All versions of the Raid armor, the Octo and non-Octo versions, have, if you're wearing 3+ pieces, they have a chance to reset all of the cooldowns of your defensive abilities when you get hit. That chance is higher with 5 pieces than with 3, but realistically 3 pieces is enough to get that consistently. That allows you, if you are an experienced tank, to change your rotation in the middle of your rotation to reuse defensive abilities to get extra damage reduction. That alone probably makes the Octo armors and the Raids armors slightly better than this new armor in the hands of an experienced tank.
But it's going to be a question, like you said, of barrier to entry at that point.
It's a question of barrier to entry. And so you, like, people that are getting Octo armor are probably experienced tanks, and so that makes sense. The other thing is that the Octo has a passive, which when you are wielding a shield, you get a small percent of that shield as an offhand equivalent. Effectively, 5 pieces of Octo with a tier 90 shield gives you the damage of a tier 45 offhand in addition. It's a nice little damage buff. It's not huge, but it's something. And so for solo content where you don't have somebody to stand behind the boss to get the additional damage from this, the Octo could be potentially higher damage.
Right.
With that said,
because that's dealing with the 5-piece or the 4-piece flank attack, right?
Correct. Yeah. So the comparison is the 4-piece flank attack. The way that will work is that the limited places where you want a person in tank armor, and you want, or you might want a person in tank armor, and you're going to be able to position the boss to stand behind it, this is going to be the best in slot armor for groups. Unfortunately, that list of places is pretty short. It's the Mazcab Raids, it's large team Solak, large team Virago, hard mode Virago, and I should note only parts of the Virago fight, and parts of Angel of Death. And I don't really think of another place where you might use this. Maybe if you had a clan that was lower level and you wanted an experienced tank who wanted to just hold the fort for a really long time while their team had fun with the boss. Those kind of things. Again, it's great armor. It's going to be more accessible. It's going to do a really good job. The other thing is the 5-piece damage shield. On the stream, it sounds like this shield is going to be pretty darn hefty. We don't know how much it's going to be yet, but it sounds like it'll be pretty darn hefty. The thing to note is that you do have to fall below 20% hit points for it to activate. Yep. A lot of base tank, so that's like for your general content, that's great. Like, that'll get used. For base tanking scenarios, if you're at high stacks for Angel of Death, if you're taking a ton of bomb damage from Virago, if you're getting slapped by Beastmaster or Yakamaru at high stacks, you're going to take well over 20% of your hit points every time you get hit. Beastmaster can do, without a defensive on, he can do a full hit bar through prayer. And the armor reduction and everything. So, there's a chance that this won't get tripped and you would just die. So it might be used. I mean, it's definitely one of those, like, when this activates, it's awesome.
Right. And
the rest of the time,
based on what I see here from my perspective, this sounds kind of more like the oops, oh no, I'm taking too much damage kind of thing.
For sure. And like I say, Crypt Bloom is going to be great a lot of places, and for people that have raid armor, you might end up just bringing three pieces of raid armor to switch into to get a defensive reset every once in a while, and then switch back, and kind of get the best of both of those things. And in that case, this armor is clearly best in slot. Like, it's amazing. All the places you want to wear tank armor. So, it's nice. It's good armor. It's clearly available. I like this as a reward. Not dieable. People with too much money can deal with it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another thing I wonder going into this is, do we know what the cost is going to be to upkeep this, or what the degrade mechanic
is
that's going
to
be on
this? It is augmentable. Okay. So the only pieces you'll need to be upkeeping, I suppose, are helmet, gloves, and boots. I imagine it will be either flakes from the boss or just coins to repair it. There's nothing that says it's going to be more complicated than that. I don't think you'll have to completely remake it. That would be probably a little nuts. I don't know if they said if we craft this or if it just drops.
Yeah, and that was going to be my other question. I was going to ask you guys
if they said it, I missed it.
Based on what we had in Carapac and the Glacier, though, I would lean towards crafting probably.
I kind of maybe hope so, but it would be fun if it just dropped pieces. I mean, that's a big drop.
It's been a while
since
we've had anything
I think you're probably right. I think this is probably a similar crafting scheme to Ganodermic, as they were basing it off of a lot of the Ganodermic. Like, the Ganodermic passive did some of this damage reduction stuff.
Right.
Pre-changes.
We could get a framework then, possibly.
That's what I'm expecting.
Drop, and then
it's like Mycelium frameworks. Mm-hmm. Or we just use the Mycelium frameworks that already exist, maybe. Who knows? If those are even still a thing. I haven't made that armor in forever. And we just use a ton of these flakes, because they did describe them as flakes, which is the same thing as, you know, your, like, Ganodermic flakes or similar. And so I kind of imagine it'll be a similar crafting scheme to that.
I wonder if they have any intent of actually going in and using the exact same Ganodermic flakes with this. Probably not.
I don't think they'll use the same flakes. I think it'll be maybe the item you crafted those armors on is called a Mycelium Framework, and you bought the Mycelium Framework helmet, body, and legs, and then you crafted that into Ganodermic or, oh my gosh, it's been too long. The other, the fungal armor, or whatever the middle one is. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. That's my expectation, though, is that it'll be craftable and you just earn the pieces over time, which is awesome. Again, super great for skillers, super great for Iron Men. Like, hardcore Iron Men will live in this armor.
Oh, yeah. Now,
for sure.
I didn't want to steal your thunder on this, and I don't know if it's time for this yet, but I thought this before you even wrote this down today, that this further cements Magicka as the tank class.
Yes! I wanted to ask both of you your opinion on that, actually. So, welcome to, like, literally every other
it's
game
just
I've
really
ever
weird.
Played. Magic, like, from console games to MMOs to everything, Magic is the, like, I want to glass cannon. I want to hit stuff real hard.
Or be the debuffer, so to speak.
Yep.
Yeah, or the debuffer, the support character.
Yep.
It's a support glass cannon, whereas the ranger is your, like, movement glass cannon. This is the, like, yeah. Yeah, so in RuneScape right now, Magic is the tank class. Magic is the one that you use when you want to get 98%+ damage reduction against melee creatures and just stand there and laugh.
A little weird. It's a little weird.
I agree.
I wish, you know, looking back, hindsight's 2020, but I wish these kinds of buffs would have been with the Masterwork, and
I agree.
The Masterwork being the power armor should have been probably with Magic.
Masterwork damage reduction is a thing too, but
yeah, I mean it's you know it's significant and everything, but at the same time, Masterwork strives to try to figure out who it is, because it has that damage reduction, but it's power armor, and you know.
I think they just wanted to give the best of both worlds to everybody who went through the effort of doing that for the mining and smithing rework, because that is something that was promised for oh so long, and at the end of the day, I feel just kind of had to deliver the kitchen sync with that.
Well, and don't be be surprised if we have. There's probably still a surprise with this boss. Maybe that surprise is there is a crafting component that is similar to a masterworking component, because if you look at a top down view.
Oh, you're right.
What if
What if the magic tank armor is magic masterwork?
Right.
Could be cool. I mean, we'll see.
But if you take like a bird's eye view of all of it, of how the offhands work, how all of this works, it's an ecosystem. Yeah. And to make the ecosystem work, I bet you there is a step that slows it down when it comes to the production of the actual armor. We'll see. I mean, once again, speculation.
But skilling boss aside, you get Mod Jack on the project. But what, Mod Jack also worked on mining and smithing.
Sure did. Yeah.
The armor was Sponge, the one that designed this armor. He was the one that was talking about the ganodermic part of it. And I'm going to talk later in the show how ranged meta is still a thing. And I do kind of like that between True Masterwork and this armor, we now have two vaguely tank-classed things for other combat styles, and that ranged, while it might have slightly better damage, does not have a great tank set right now. You have the Octo set, but there's no like true dedicated, I'm going to soak even more damage than I should be able to. Maybe that's how that's balanced. Maybe that's how they're balancing the combat triangle with this.
All right.
But I'm really going to dive into that one later.
All right. Well, obviously next up is skilling offhands. We're getting two of those. This is something that, they said, when they came out with, Orthyn, they really didn't have the, bang that they did in terms of people wanting them, but lo and behold, here's more of them. I'm happy that these are here. We're getting skilling offhands for woodcutting and mining. The first one is Taga's Core Hammer, level 80 mining offhand that gives you 10% critical strike chance and 35 critical strike damage when equipped. And when mining ores from the fungal core using Taga's Core Hammer, you'll have a chance to receive Death Spore arrow tips. More on those later. And the higher tier ore, the higher chance you'll have to get arrow tips, and the more you'll get.
Do you think that's a typo?
Is it only from the core? So it's only from the fungal core?
They said all core ores on the stream. I think this is mining from anything.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, because that's what it
better
says.
Better not be just these. Yeah.
Because that's what
there
it says.
There would not be
enough
arrow tips if that's the case.
Right.
Well, and that's what I was... Yeah, and that would change... That would change my opinion.
Let's assume they're all cores. Let's just assume that. I think that's a safe assumption here.
Yeah, and because that's what it says for the wood cutting one as well. So
okay, so does the wood cutting do the same?
The wood cutting, and then unpack these.
All right.
Yeah.
So this one is Santa's Fire Torch. I assume that's how we want to pronounce that. Yeah. Level 80 woodcutting offhand that gives 6% strike chance when woodcutting and 20% chance to get an extra log. And when Santa's Fire Torch is equipped, you'll also get the chance to receive splintering arrow tips when chopping logs. Again, so this is what it was saying, the higher tier the log, the higher chance of receiving arrow tips, the more you'll get.
Okay, I just really think that it's important to note that our highest level woodcutting hatchet axe, tier 70, and we now have a woodcutting tier 80 offhand. Guys, please, tier 80, tier 90 hatchet, for the love of God and all that is holy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Go for it.
That needs to be done. Totally agree that needs to be done.
Why is that not on this boss? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, anyway. Okay. I lost my train of thought anyway. Come back to me in a second.
Okay.
All right.
We were talking a bit before the show, or maybe earlier in the show. I'm sorry if I forget.
That's fine.
About some of the lowest XP per hour skills. The four lowest currently are agility, mining, wood cutting, fishing. Followed, I believe, by runecrafting, unless I've missed something. Even with soul runes. And so, I think that getting upgrades to the mining and woodcutting aspects of that are great. Agility has and will always be a pain point, and I think that's just the identity of the skill at this point.
Yeah.
And fishing has some nice produce and is, I want to say, at least as AFK as the other.
I feel like fishing is in an okay spot since deep sea.
Fishing's up to like 280k. Fishing's the highest of these the highest of those four. And the others are woodcutting. People will argue you get up to 300,000 per hour on golden bamboo, but you also don't get any money from that.
It's hard to keep that up. See, that's that Munkle math shit, and it's not accurate. I don't agree with
it. I'm totally on board with you on this one, Dennis.
Yeah. I remember what I wanted to say about the scaling offhands. And I don't want to be like Debbie Downer about it, but I really kind of feel blah on these. Because when it comes to scaling, it's not a big, it's just not. There's no wow factor here.
Well,
now what is wow though? Is it the ecosystem I was talking about? The arrowheads. Arrowhead things. That's what it is. It's the arrowhead gimmick that you have to wear to get arrowheads.
You're right on that.
I mean,
but we can't underscore how important 10% critical strike chance and 35% critical or 35 critical strike damage is when you're going for the Animikas. You are going to feel the benefit of that. And same thing with the woodcutting
several
one.
Tiers of pickaxe.
Yeah, and same thing with the woodcutting one. When you're going for magics or elders, you are going to feel that
6% success chance on magics and elders will give you way like it's yeah. You should really feel these buffs. Like these are going to be, I think, fairly helpful. And I'll talk about the arrows later, but I think these are going to give you as much as anything else. I think these are going to give you a lot of money, like a lot of money. Voice crack.
Like money.
I want the woodcutting one.
Two. Mostly because those arrow tips are going to be in high demand.
Yeah. And I said that until this boss comes out, the only thing I'm doing on RS is chopping elder logs.
Because those arrow shafts are expensive right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have a quick way? Like, we don't have like the crystal tree teleport, do we?
For elders?
Elder.
Yeah, it's on elders. The Elite Nature Sentinel outfit.
I think it's also...
You can't make that one, though, can you?
Yeah, you can.
Is it also on the skill portals or no?
Unsure. Okay.
I don't know if it's on the skill portals, but nonetheless. For me, this is...
The Elder Tree, Shane.
Yeah, these are the rewards I'm most interested in for this. And I think the reason these are going to be in demand, and I think woodcutting is going to have a good spot going forward, comes directly from the arrows.
It's not on there. No. Yeah, and it will come from the arrows, and we're going to talk about the arrows. I have said it a lot already today. We are going to talk about the arrows.
All right.
Let's come back to that. We'll touch on the arrows in a bit.
Is there anything else on the scaling offhands, or can I move on to the seed bag and extra big rune pouch?
Yeah. Your big, yeah. Is it a swollen pouch, Shane?
No.
Oh, my.
Okay.
No.
Tell us more about it anyways.
The grasping rune pouch upgrades the existing rune pouch. It allows you to hold four different runes, gives a +4 bonus to prayer, and you'll also have a 25% chance not to use runes when casting combat spells.
Yeah, they mentioned the crafting scheme for this was going to not involve a core drop, just flakes and other things maybe scraped off the boss. So that's nice. You're going to be able to just earn these over time, make some money off of it.
And I think just doing some quick math in my head about the 25% chance, what you're effectively looking at here is probably about every 4 to 5 spells you're going to have this activate, at least.
I mean, 1 in 4 spells, it should go off.
Yeah.
And your rune cost should be down 25%, which is great. Even more than that, though, for at least the mid to high tier PVM people, these rune pouches are amazing space savers. Even if you are only using the two new spells. This allows you to swap between the spells without needing a second rune pouch or an extra runes in your inventory. If you want to camp exsanguinate every like once a minute or once every couple minutes, you just want to throw out a tsunami, you can just swap spells, get 5 stacks of the Incite Fear, and use your tsunami, and then swap back. And the exsanguinate stacks take 30 seconds to fall away, so you don't even lose them. So being able to have 4 runes in the pouch will allow you to do that with 1 pouch, which is awesome. Plus, it'll save you money, plus it's got the prayer bonus. And for the really, the high-tier PVM community, you know, we use a lot of non-combat spells that are classed as combat spells. Everything from Disruption Shield and Intercept, Spellbook Swaps, Vengeances, Disrupts, Smoke Clouds. And bringing the runes for most of those with me, I tend to bring 4 rune pouches in my really high-tier ranging setups. Which is just crazy, but now I can choose to bring 3 rune pouches.
So you bring rune pouches when you use ranged?
I do, yeah. I always have at least Disruption Shield on me. Usually Disruption Shield and Vengeance.
All right.
So that's really nice with these. The other thing to consider is that range also needs 2 to 4 types of ammo in those situations. Yep. You've got Ruby Bolts, you've got Hydrix Bolts in your Death Swiftness, and when you're low health, you've got, you know, maybe some Blackstone Arrows. And with these new arrows, we're going to up that ammo number and add a bow to your inventory suddenly. So inventory space is looking real tight, and so this is a good, like, let's keep that Switchscape to, like, not preventing you from bringing food.
Yay!
Hey! Oh, God, what
okay,
have we done?
So the rune pouch is definitely something people will be picking up, and that makes sense,
yeah,
I think.
It'll be worth money.
All right.
I will be buying 3 or 4 of these.
Okay.
Or upgrading three.
And they
or
did
four
say
of these.
That if you have dyed pouches, the dyed upgraded version will stay dyed after that, so you don't need to worry about that disappearing. The seed bag is an item that stores 40 different types of seeds to their usual maximum stack, and you'll be able to craft the seed bag with materials you collect from the Croesus encounter, although they won't say what the exact recipe is.
Yeah, they did say that this requires a core drop, so there will be one item that is the bag drop that you then combine with flakes and other stuff. And in some tertiaries, I'm kind of imagining just like a few mystic cloth or something. Don't know. Yeah.
This is going to save a ton of bank space.
I'm a little worried that, like, I'm hopeful that you can just plant seeds out of it somehow. Yeah. Otherwise, when you pull it, you're going to have to, it's going to be a lot of, like, interface management on farm runs.
And the question is, do you really want to do that? Or are you just going to, you know, keep doing it the way you do it?
Maybe, like, you only have one allotment and or flower and or herb seed that you regularly use. Yeah. And so you just load presets with that and you keep all the rest of your seeds in this pouch. Like, this is going to be great for Iron Men.
Yeah.
Want to store all their seeds. And maybe the QOL on it is amazing and you can just use seeds out of it and you never have to worry and it's the best thing the world has ever seen.
I can't believe
it's
taken a decade and a half to get this.
I'm excited for it. Yeah, it'll be a good space saver. It might be a little cumbersome, but it's a good upgrade, so I'll take it.
All right. And with,
might even turn my seed aside off.
Yeah.
Ooh. I have a reason to now.
You weren't around in the olden days, Tannis. I used to call the seed aside blasphemy.
Oh, no.
Ooh, that's a really good point, though, because the seed aside can be set to automatically pick up seeds now. If this seed bag allows you to auto pick up seeds into the bag, it's a slayer item as much as it is a bank space. That's actually, ooh.
I'm
a little more excited.
Once again, that's a skiller. That's a skiller's paradise with that.
Yeah, true. Let's go. That's what we want from
this. All right. We also have the Scripture of Bic, of course. With this, its special ability is Nature's Veil. When using non-combat spells, you will occasionally reveal a catalyst of alteration, which can be interacted with for rewards. Upon gaining rewards, receive a 5% XP boost for 1 minute.
When I first heard of this, I thought people were overhyping it. then I actually finished listening through the stream. I don't think it's being overhyped. I mean, my first impression on this is, you know, you get 1 to 3 clue scrolls weighted towards higher tier scrolls every few minutes, plus some extra XP. That is awesome, and it overshadows every other skilling pocket slot. That's true. But the thing they said on stream that I wasn't sure about before is that it does have a higher activation chance than the Bridge of the Gods, which means you're getting an absolute ton of clue scrolls from this. It still has some small internal cooldown of a minute or whatever, but it sounds like you can get activations from this maybe more than once a minute. The buff lasts a minute, and they were saying you potentially will have to like wait to grab your next one.
So do you go for this or the Brooch of the Gods then?
Oh, I mean, if I'm a person that does clue scrolls, I would go for this, but see, there's a catch. And the only catch that wasn't addressed, I was worried that maybe it had a really low activation chance, and that would be okay and balanced. The thing they didn't talk about is how often the pages drop. From Karapak and the Glacier, we got pages kind of sprinkled on us like candy. My hope with this is that the pages are infrequent.
Oh, so have the cheap book, but have the
like
more expensive
one page
pages.
Every hour or two, maybe.
Right.
And so people do a ton of skilling outside of this boss, so they're going to be buying these pages. And if the pages are really expensive, that's effectively saying, you know, my hope is that maybe pages are a few mil. Right? And that's effectively saying, I'm going to spend a few mil to get a bunch of clue scrolls from my normal skilling rather than going and killing hellhounds, rather than going and pickpocketing elves. My hope is that there's a pretty big monetary cost because these don't come into the game quickly. If they're cheap, if they're 100k like the other boss pages, you actually just use this all the time because it's an XP buff.
Right.
I'm going to continue to use my Bridge of the Gods.
I'm not excited about this. Tanis, how do you feel?
I like the urns in the Bridge of the Gods.
If it's cheaper than the brooch, then I'm down with that. I'd like to have a book that I could actually use and have a purpose using, just because, I don't know.
Do you clues, Tanis?
No. Finding things is like the bane of my existence in any game.
You know, that's the thing is that this is probably going to be a pretty expensive for a pretty small XP buff. Like, I think it really is. You pay to get clue scrolls. That's what this book does.
But you can get clue scrolls practically anywhere relatively easily with this. So, with a 5% boost, I mean,
5% for 1 minute, and if it activates relatively frequently, I mean, we just assume that it's, I'll say 3% extra XP on average. I'm totally ballparking here. And it's pretty good, but it's not worth a ton of money every 45 minutes to grab a page. So, I think the clue scroll and the page drop rate will be the things with this, and we'll have to just reevaluate next week with how it's fallen out.
All right, fair enough. All right, so arrows.
This
everybody loves
to
their
arrows.
Bolts.
Yeah.
Am I going to be wanting arrows next week?
Yeah, so here's, I mentioned this to you earlier, this is where I'm going to pause us for a few minutes, because I really want to do a tangent for context here. I really want to we're going to go over the major power creep updates and changes to the combat triangle balance since EOC. Because I think that it's important to put this into context for what these arrows are going to do before I talk about them. I truly think they're ridiculous. I think they're crazy strong. And let's put some history before we talk about the ridiculous pointy sticks.
All right. Well, you told me 3 to 5 minutes, so I'm going to time you. So begin.
Let's do it. I wrote it out in advance, so it's time for story time with Taxi.
Buckle up, everyone.
So, on EOC release day, Melee was king thanks to Berserk. It didn't take long, Sunshine and Deathswift released also in 2013, and for the sake of argument, we'll say the combat was triangle was something close to balanced at that time. A year or two later, people realized that you could 4-tick auto-attack with magic by switching weapons, And that gave magic a sweaty and expensive 15% damage buff. And the magic meta began. 2016, we got Invention, which obviously wasn't a combatter style specific, but for comparison here, it gave us about a 17% damage buff for a whole spanking 120. And just keep that in mind. Next up, Telos released, and Melee got the Zaros Godsword, which was a 12.5% buff that was situational, but required you to stand still. So, not incredibly useful, maybe, but a good buff. Enchanted Bakuman Bolts were released later that year, and Ranged got a 12 to 15% damage buff that basically nobody registered as super important. We all said, oh, this is a nice quality of life, I'll use these sometimes. Oh, they're expensive? Maybe not. And people just kind of glossed over it. So now it's 2018, and after buff, and after buffs to Melee, oh no, hold on, I did miss something. Right, Melee got the ZGS, the Bakuna Bolt released, right. So 2018, we've got those two buffs to Melee and Ranged that bring that up to maybe where 4-tick auto-attacking is, and I would argue the combat triangle is nearly balanced again. People are still sleeping on Hydrix Bolts, and on Rubies to a lesser degree, so Range is seen as a bit weaker, but Magic is still used most places because of its ranged advantage over Melee. Next up, the ED2 Codex upgrades for Melee dropped with trimmed Masterwork, and the Cerrodome and Godbow special was reworked and buffed so that it was actually useful while the ECB was released.
Eldritch Crossbow.
It was big... Yeah, Eldritch Crossbow, right. With these big updates to Range and Melee, and people realizing that Ruby Bolts are actually pretty good, Magic was left behind for DPS. People are still sleeping on Hydrix Bolts. They've also used Magic for nearly 4 years, and they're used to it, and they know that it works. And so Magic is still used at a lot of high-tier PVM. The perception is that things are pretty balanced. In reality, Magic is probably a bit behind. Remainder of 2019 and 2020 are quiet until December of 2020. Greater Ricochet is released, and people realize at large that Hydrix Bolts also exist. At this point, Tier 85 plus range gear all triples in price. Magic has not gotten a buff in years, really just 4-tick auto-attacking, and ranged is suddenly ridiculous. At this point, outside the highest echelons of PVMers, outside the true masters of Magic, outside the masters of Melee, and people that can hybrid, range does about 15 to 20% more damage than Magic, and Melee falls somewhere in the middle of those. It's the wildest damage range seen since EOC. We've never had something jump up that far above another style. We know that buffs are coming to Magic, maybe Melee, and Elder God Wars then gets announced. Karapak drops 15 to 20% DPS buffs to Magic, which is... Just think about that. That's bigger than a 120 skill. It's the biggest jump since 2013 when we got the damage-boosting ultimates. The Glacier drops about a 10% buff to Melee, and for the last few weeks, I would personally say the combat triangle was something close to balanced again. This is where I was hoping Elder God Wars would leave us until the next big PVM update. For a while, in other words. To let the gear, price of gear fall back towards even between the styles, let people use what they wanted to use, not worry about somebody saying, hey, what are you doing? I wanted maybe some new ranged gear, but nothing best in slot, nothing big, just maybe an alternative weapon for people who are wanting to get into range to use. And that brings us to these arrows. Also, just for context, I love bows. I've used bows for a lot of solo content, just for personal preference, and I realize that without Bacriminals, bows are the weakest weapon choice of any style of combat outside of thrown weapons.
And I just want to interject with that I don't think I've used a bow since AOC came out.
I love them. I still use them for, honestly, most of my solo content, and I think they do just fine.
Like the added distance.
Yeah. Well, the Eldritch Crossbow does have a 9-square range, just like a bow, but for the most part, you're right, yeah, they're shorter. Which leads to my hottest take for the day, and a TLDR for the next segments. With these arrows, I personally am very confident that bow camping will out-damage crossbow camping when using the best options for arrows and the best option for bolts. And that with switching at appropriate times between two arrows and bolts, this will be more than a 15% DPS buff to best in slot range. Potentially much, much, much higher.
So effectively what you're talking about then is doing a swap between the high-level bow with the new arrows and crossbows with Hydrix.
Correct. And some other stuff besides. And I'll unpack all of those rotations as we go through these arrows. But it's huge. And there goes the triangle again. The range meta will continue. And I know that I'm framing this in a really harsh light. Like, I know. And maybe it's not... And truly, I don't know that it's super healthy for the game. Simply from, like, I'm okay with power creep. Power creep is amazing and should be existing because it
it's
makes...
It's natural in an MMO.
Older, yeah, it makes older content more accessible for more players. And I think that's awesome, right? Like, Solak on release was so challenging for everybody. Solak now is in the reach of a lot of players. Like, and I think that that's a good thing. I really like that. I just dislike that we've gone from getting, you know, 5 or 10% buffs to each combat style every, like, 3 or 4 years to now, in the space of 2-3 years, the combat styles have all gotten, you know, 20 to 30% buffs. And this is a huge one that I think people are like, it's just arrows, dog. so, yeah, I really don't know how I feel about that. But again, that's a lot of, like, Debbie Downer combat balance stuff, which is... needs to be opposed by the, like, power creep is good, and being able to access content is good. And I think that, firstly, that these new arrows are going to be so fun to use. Like, I really do. I think they're going to increase the number of competitive ranged weapons, which might do something to balance the price of crossbows down a bit.
Yeah. That needs to happen, honestly.
And I think they open room for... like a ton of really fun rotations and really high tier skill expression through frankly ridiculous adrenaline gains. Like math that I've done on these will say that I can gain 800% adrenaline in under 30 seconds. So let's dive into it. Let's explain some mechanics and crunch some numbers. And we can start with splinter arrows.
All right. I'll read what they do on the tin here, and of course this is before any changes that might happen before launch, and we're assuming they're going to launch this way. So, splinter arrows cause any attacks used within 4.2 seconds after greater dazing shot to apply puncture stacks. Of course, you need to have unlocked greater dazing shot from Shattered Worlds for this to work. In addition... the maximum number of puncture stacks will be increased to 13 when using splintering arrows. And death spore arrows will boost your critical chance by +3.
Let's do one at a time.
Okay. Splintering first.
Splintering first. Okay, there's two things that get changed with this. It's salt the wound and it's puncture. I'm going to do salt the wound first because it can be a little more straightforward. Let's... do lay the scene very briefly with a comparison to other ranged thresholds. Tendrils will do an average of 275% damage that hurt you. Snapshot will do an average of 265, not hurt you. Rapid fire will do an average of 450, but it takes 2 to 3 ability slots, so we'll say 200% for the sake of argument, for comparison's sake. Rapid fire and snapshot are 20 second cooldown. Tendrils is 30. Salt the wound, as it stands right now. The description's a bit deceiving. It doesn't add 18% flat damage for each stack of puncture. It adds up to 18% damage. The actual number is about 11%. Which is to say that the average damage of the salt the wound ability at 0 stacks... is about 110%, and at 10 stacks is about 220%. So above 6 stacks is where it passes snipe in terms of damage, becomes something we might want to think about using. 10 stacks, its current maximum, makes it better than rapid fire, but worse than snapshot, and a good all-around ability. That's the current setup with that. It also has a 15-second cooldown, so it's good damage and it's low cooldown. Like, it's a good ability. With the newer arrows, we'll get 3 additional stacks. The math on that says that at max stacks, Salt the Wound will do 15 more damage than it currently does. That puts it at 250%, which is very close to Snapshot. But again, 5-second lower cooldown, great ability. you will want to be using this with the new arrows.
So what I'm getting is that I, at some point, really should purchase Salt the Wound and Puncture.
If you want to use these arrows, you should. The thing about this, though, is that it's not currently used anywhere. Nobody has told you to buy it because it's got some issues with it. And I'll talk about those with Puncture because it relates to stacking of Puncture. So let's talk about Puncture as the second part of this. Just scroll away in your mind that with the new arrows, Salt the Wound does 15% more damage and is a great basic when it's fully stacked, or a great threshold when it's fully stacked. Let's talk about Puncture. Puncture is the thing that people are sleeping on with these arrows. Puncture is the reason they are so powerful. Mechanics on Puncture. It deals every 5.4 seconds. Let's not start there. Let's say when you hit something with Dazing Shot, you get a stack of this. Mutated Dazing Shot, you get a stack of Puncture. Each stack of Puncture on the target does 6.5% ability damage average over 4 hits. They occur every 3 damage ticks, every 1.8 seconds. This is where I start to lose people with math. The most important part to know about Puncture is that damage pool, that 6.5% per stack, is front-loaded very heavily. So it's split out into the 4 hits. The first hit does 7/15 of the total damage. The second hit does 5. The third hit does 3 or 2. And the fourth hit does 1.
All right.
2 and 1. Yeah, 7, 5, 2, and 1. So that is to say that those first two hits are the biggest part of the damage. And the first hit is the biggest part of the damage. On live right now, you can only reset that stack count with Mutated Dazing Shot or Puncture. So effectively, a 5.4 second cooldown on Mutated Dazing Shot is your thing, which is exactly 3 rounds of Salt the Wound, so you get 14/15 of 6.5% per stack. I'm going to do the math for you here and say that with a tier 90 weapon and maximum stacks, 10 stacks, that is 13, almost 14,000 damage a minute. And it can apply poison. So you add 33 potential rounds of poison hits onto that, and it suddenly deals 18,000 plus a bit points of damage per minute.
Uh-huh.
It's almost 10% additional damage just from the bleed of this.
I see how that's
from using a basic
up.
Ability. It's really big, and that's on live. That's currently existing in this game. So it's a ton. It's a ton of damage. It's really good. And that, if you count the puncture damage as part of Dazing Shot, because you need to Dazing Shot to upkeep it, currently Dazing Shot deals 94% base damage and then 61% ability damage from puncture, which we'll round and say, you know, it's 160 and whatever that math works out to. Yeah, about 160-ish damage, percent damage on a basic ability, which puts it in the plus, again, 4 hits of poison, which brings it up closer to 200%. So it's in a similar, a fully stacked puncture, Dazing Shot, is in the similar realm of damage to almost a greater ricochet. It's definitely in the same realm as, like, Corruption Shot or Snipe. It's really good. So the question that follows that is, why aren't we using this right now? What is the disconnect here?
That would be my biggest
awesome
question
thing
with this.
The thing about it is that you must apply, if you don't apply a new stack, reset your cooldown for these every 9 seconds, all of your stacks go away. Which means you need to be attacking the same target with 10 abilities that occur once every 5.4 seconds. Which means it takes nearly a minute to stack. You need to be constantly attacking the same target without interruption for a full minute. What that means is that the monster must have more than 200,000 life points, and it must not interrupt you in any way. So it can't have additional damage dealers you need to kill, additional monsters. It can't have an invulnerability phase. It can't have a phase transition, so like Yakumaru or Virago that change
right.
their phases, or the fourth phase of Araxor. It'll remove all those stacks. Effectively, if you remove all of those bosses, you end up with Karapak. Karapak is where this is used for right now.
That's what I was thinking.
That's it. Nowhere else. Cannot use this other places. For a while, when I was learning Grigorovic, using a bow, so lower damage, I could get this stacked, and you know, above 6 stacks, it's worth using Salt the Wound. So I could get a couple Salt the Wounds off near the end of a Grigorovic kill, but I mean, the realistic use places for this is Karapak right now. So that's the problem. The problem we have to address is that it takes a long time to stack this. Which brings us back to the arrows. These new arrows allow every time you hit the boss for 4.2 seconds after mutated dazing shot, every time you hit with a ranged ability, we'll apply another stack. And refresh the bleed on puncture. So there's two things to think about there. The first is the stacking. Let's talk about that because we've just been talking about it.
Sure.
If I start a kill or start attacking something and I dazing shot into greater ricochet into snapshot, I have a 13 stack monster in front of me. That's it. That's how it goes. 5 seconds. I have 5 seconds. I have 13 puncture stacks. All of that damage that we weren't getting before because it took so long. Salt the Wound is now usable. Puncture is now stacked. 5 seconds. If you don't have greater ricochet, you dazing shot into rapid fire, into a dazing shot, into another basic, and you're fully stacked. 8 seconds. 8 seconds without greater ricochet to fully stack the new arrows on this thing to get all of that damage. So the arrows are effectively bringing that damage with them, which is amazing. Plus, you also, that the damage, the math I was doing with 10 stack puncture, now we have 13 stack puncture, so it puncture bleed damage does even more. And on top of that, we're refreshing the puncture every time we hit now. Because effectively, every basic we use will reset puncture based on the length that these cooldowns are. So remember that puncture is front-loaded. That's 7 out of 15ths of the total damage that we were getting before, followed by a 5 and a 2,
right,
and then restart. We now get 7, then 7, and 7. So before we were getting 14/15ths of the damage, we're getting 21/15ths, which is a straight-up 50% increase to the damage from puncture. Plus the 3 stacks that are additional, and those two multiply with each other, 1.3 times 1.5 is almost exactly 2.
Now, my question with this, is this going to be a sleeper like we had on the Karapak discussion?
I think it is. I think people aren't realizing about the refreshing and everything else that puncture now does twice as much damage, which means that you're now getting 122% ability damage from puncture plus 94% damage from dazing shot every time you dazing shot. Dazing shot is now a 250% ability. Quick reminder, snapshot's 265. Salt the Wound fully stacked is 250 with the new arrows. Like, dazing shot is something you really want to apply every third ability now. And if you're doing it, you're going to get ridiculous gains. So we're doubling our puncture damage. So we now have 28,000 puncture damage plus 5,000 damage from poison, 33,000. Plus, remember, we're using Salt the Wound 4 times a minute now. And we're going to compare that to, we'll remove a basic ability and replace it with Salt the Wound, just for the sake of argument. So Salt the Wound does 160% more damage than an average basic. Multiply that by 4, can transition it into tier 90 damage. That's about 12 or 13,000 damage. And suddenly these arrows are doing 45,000 damage a minute above using regular ammo.
And this is with a bow, that can be it.
This is with a bow. So this is people are doing, you know, 20... difference between using Araxite arrows and using these arrows is going to be close for a novice PVMer will be close to 25% additional damage just from your arrows. And that you can do that on Revolution. You just put mutated dazing shot first on your bar. So that's amazing. For comparison, we're getting 45,000 from this. Hydrix bolts. If you assume that Hydrix bolts activate at an average amount, you get about 120-130% adrenaline per minute from them. We'll do the high tier PVM thing and say that you convert that adrenaline into dark bow specs under death swiftness, just for the sake of argument. Hydrix arrows do 40,000 damage a minute. That's less than 45,000. Ruby bolts, if you math out with greater ricochet, best case scenario use, always switching away when low monster HP. Ruby Becriminal bolts are almost 30,000 damage a minute. This is a full 50% more damage than Ruby bolts. So this is really strong, and this is camping these arrows. No funny switches, no crazy strategies, no rotation changes. It's just using Dazing Shot every 5 seconds.
And the thing that is appealing to me on this is that we're not dealing with Hydrix bolt tips here. We're dealing with something that is presumably going to come into game through skilling.
We've got Elder Arrow Shafts, and we've got potentially expensive new arrow tips if people realize they're so good. I expect this to be fairly expensive to use because it is so powerful. If they've balanced this to just throw tons of arrow tips at us, this is awesome, and everybody will be using this as your new Slayer tool. But we'll see how the price on them goes and how quickly they come into game in terms of where they get used, in terms of price, but it's really powerful. Like, if you want to really hit something with the damages, these will do it. Something else, too, that needs to be talked about with these is that I am not 100% sure how swapping off of these will work. My expectation is that your new puncture stack max will become 10. That the next time you hit something with mutated Dazing Shot, it will just revert to a 10-stack buff. What they said in the stream was that the way that puncture will work is that it will... whoever most recently applied puncture to the thing will get the puncture image based on their weapon tier. So I kind of just assume that if a person has a 10 stack max puncture, the puncture they apply will just be 10 stacks instead of 13.
Right.
It could be that the stacks are say, oh no, this is 13 stacks, you can't have this anymore, and they'll just fall off. And these arrows will be useless as a switch. And I kind of hope that that's the case. If it's not the case, and if the stacks can be maintained or if they reset to 10...
And the reason we say that isn't to rain on people's parade. It's just to create an ecosystem where you want to have a bow of use.
But right. didn't they address that in the live stream? Say that it wouldn't be any good with a switch?
Said that, well, the other ones are definitely intended. Well, the other ones definitely, everything falls off. The stacks, the buffs, everything falls off with the other arrows if you take them off. That's really easy to see. With these, I don't know. If nothing else, what you can do with these is start the kill with them, and then before you hit 13 stacks, just swap off. So you start with a mutated Dazing Shot into greater ricochet into any other ammo. Suddenly, you're sitting at 9 stacks, and you're where you want to be. And what this will allow you to do is to stack puncture immediately. So previously, I did say that Salt the Wound and puncture were really strong, but we didn't use them because we couldn't stack it fast. We can now stack it fast. And you don't need to ever switch back to these in order to maintain that stacking. You don't get that reset on the bleed, and you don't get the other things, but effectively you can use any other ammo you want to, as long as it's a two-handed weapon, and maintain your 10's puncture staff. So Salt the Wound is still viable, and you're still hitting poison damage, and you're still hitting the other things from this. So you're still hitting, you know, close to 30,000 damage just off of having puncture stacked if you're using these at the start of combat and then never going back to them. So they can stack onto literally any other bolt or arrow, which is part of why I think the scaling and the bump from this update is so huge, is that we've made these things viable to use on top of the stuff that's currently available. So that's the first tier of power creep, is to say, forget the death spore arrows. I'm just now stacked and I'm going to use bolts. But, you know, we'll pull that all together with the death spore arrows as a summary after we've gone through them. So let's talk about death spore arrows. Sean, right. Do you want to read us off?
Before we do that, I'll just actually take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters, because they've been waiting. Yeah. They've been waiting a long time. But the explanation is definitely worth it. And this week I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Brock H., Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plox, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jesse W., Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Rate, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel FL, Scott DS, Soup Finder, Stub Eve, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly does mean the world to us, and we have news on the Patreon front. The monthly bit for October that you'll get in the first or second week of the month has been chosen as Where Do the Elder God Wars End? Yes.
Recrafting.
Our lore panel will be put to the task to try and figure out where this thing is ending without going down paths of wild speculation. And we will try to justify ourselves and whatnot. So that's going to be an amazing one to record. If you want access to that. What was that, Taxi?
The odds be ever in your favor for that one.
Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous. I don't normally get nervous about the monthly bits, but this is definitely one that's got a lot riding on it, and to be right with that. So if you want access when this is out, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. You can gain access to that and the entire back catalog of monthly bits for as little as $1 a month. We also have a $3 a month tier where you get a special VIP rank on our Discord server and access to high-quality stereo versions of the podcast. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out each and every week on the show, and you'll gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And, of course, we are working towards the RSBNB update Patreon mail-out. Everybody will get a nice little gift when we reach $200 a month. And should we ever reach 500, Tannis and I will subject our taste buds to a huge range of spice with the Hot Ones Challenge. He's looking forward to that, aren't you?
Oh, can't wait.
But I think what everybody's going to be looking forward to is seeing what kind of theory crafting we can come up with on this and hopefully justify ourselves in the process. And the main reason I'm worried is because our Centistan Lore Diggers panel ended with a big open question of what exactly Voss is and just how that might work its way into the end of the God Wars series. So there's lots of big questions that we'll hopefully answer on that, and you guys have given us a mandate to do that, and we should have that to you in the first or second week of October. So thank you, everybody, for making what we do possible, and we're going to go back and talk about Deathspore Arrows now. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, so these ones boost your crit chance by 3%, and when you crit, you'll gain a stack of Feasting Spores, and at 5 stacks, you'll gain a buff, which makes your next range ability that would normally cost Adrenaline 3 if you cast it within 9 seconds. This effect will have a 60-second cooldown, but each time you crit while using the Deathspore Arrows, this cooldown is reduced by 1.8 seconds.
Yeah.
How do you feel about these compared to the splitting ones?
Oh, they're more powerful.
Yeah, I agree.
They're even worse.
Oh.
They're stronger.
Yeah.
They're more power creep. They're also way more fun, at least from my perspective. So there's two parts to these. The critical chance and the passive effect. I think these are being less slept on, but I think people haven't fully thought through all the ways you can use them yet. So, crit chance. We're going to ignore how much damage that is. It's 3% chance for 20% additional damage, which is 0.6% additional damage. If you don't believe me on that, we can talk through the math later. Tag me. It's negligible. We're going to kind of ignore it. Just note that it exists and will increase damage from something like a grimoire, and it will also increase the chance for these arrows, and that's kind of it for range. Range doesn't have a huge amount of crit scaling, thankfully. The other piece of this is the big part. It's the passive. I'm going to put an emphasis on this and really try to just nail this home into everybody's brains, that these arrows are only a Switch. Other arrows are better. Other ammo of any variety is better damage per minute. You must time the activation on these to make them useful. I made a calculator for how long it should take you in your average rotation to stack these. It's variable, obviously, based on your crit chance. What this means is that effectively you do get to use some other arrow or bolt when you're using these. If you want to just bow camp, then you swap over to Araxite or splitting arrows, splintering arrows. The thing is that when you use these, your best use scenario is going to be with high crit chance. If you are not using a grimoire with these, stacking them and timing it correctly will eat somewhat into a death swiftness. So you won't be able to use your other ammo for the entirety of your death swiftness. With a grimoire and one of the Rex Matriarch rings of your choice, and the Biting 4 perk, or alternatively, you could replace some of those with like the armor effect of the Sliske Anima Core because you're outside of a death swiftness, so you're not worried about damage as much. You could replace some of these with the scroll effect of the Calgarian Demon. You could probably get away without using the Grimoire. And without using these inner death swiftness. You just want to hit about 30% critical chance. And if you can hit that 30% critical chance, you can hit you should be able to hit, on average, just enough critical hit strikes with these to reduce the cooldown and fully stack them right when 60 seconds hits and Death Swiftness comes off cooldown. Because you want to be using these to pop some ultimate, it doesn't have to be your Death Swiftness, at the start of your rotation. The last arrows, we did a ton of math. I'm not going to do math for these. We're going to specifically talk about rotations. I've lost a lot of my energy. Let's bring it back up. These things are awesome. I truly, truly love these. I think they're going to be such fun to use. Where do I even start with going through what these actually mean? They said on the stream that these will act like a relentless proc. I don't know if that means that the blog post is wrong and it will also work on special attacks, essence of finality, anything in the ability book, basically. So not...
not
work on like other neutral basic abilities in your defensive and hit points books, or if they'll work on special attacks, those kind of things. At the very least, these will work on Incendiary Shot and Death Swiftness. Death Swiftness is where I will almost always be using this. I will be using the extra adrenaline for other things. So what this means is that effectively at the start of your Death Swiftness, you have 100% extra adrenaline if you time this right. Because Death Swiftness is free. Pretty crazy things with that. So I'm going to talk through what is, in my opinion, the craziest rotation that I have come up with for these.
All right.
And that rotation involves setting yourself to 100% adrenaline around the 50-second mark. So we're doing a 60-second interval here. The first 38 seconds of that are a Death Swiftness with planted feet. Then you've got about 12 seconds during which your arrows are shortening the cooldown, you should get the first two stacks of new arrow passive. When you get that second stack, you immediately incendiary shot. Should be 8 to 10 seconds from when you incendiary shot to when you hit that fifth stack on these arrows, assuming 30% crit chance. And you are able to get a free Death Swiftness. The Incendiary Shot is important, and we'll talk about it in a second. Once you Death Swiftness, you immediately Natural Instinct. So you have just used three ultimate abilities within 10 seconds. We'll throw that out there just to like sit on people's brains for a minute. And the question you have to ask me at this point is, okay, Tom, but like... how are you getting adrenaline to use Death Swiftness when you just incendiary shots? And that comes down to the passive that's on incendiary shot, which is that every time you crit, you get 10% yeah. adrenaline. What you're doing is you're incendiary shotting, and then you're actually popping your adrenaline potion at that point. And then you use a couple of basics, probably a greater ricochet or you know, something else to just throw a bunch of damage to get your crits off. And you're at 100% when you hit that third crit, and you Death Swift for free, you Natural Instinct. You're now sitting, if you're using the 110% Adrenaline Relic and a Ring of Vigor, which I think you probably want to be camping a Ring of Vigor for all of this, for 90% cost on Adrenaline on Ultimates, just to save a little bit. You're now under the effects of, you have 20 seconds under the Incendiary Shot buff, 20 seconds under the Natural Instinct buff, and 35 plus seconds under Death Swiftness. Natural Instinct doubles your adrenaline gain from all sources except adrenaline potions, which is why I adrenaline potioned earlier. What this means is that anytime you crit, and I also will say at this point I'm personally going to be using Hydrix Bolts. Hydrix Bolts are 1 in 7 chance to activate, and you have a 1 in 3 chance to crit. So after you Natural Instinct, your Greater Ricochet should just come off cooldown, in theory. You pop that again. It hits 8 times. Alternatively, you rapid fire, whatever, you figure something out. But we'll say Greater Ricochet because it makes these numbers look really fun. Greater Ricochet hits 8 times. You have a 1/3 chance to crit, and you should activate a Hydrix Bolt from these, which means if you weren't under Natural Instinct, you gain 40% adrenaline. That's 50% adrenaline. But Natural Instinct makes that 100% adrenaline from a single basic ability. So you have just used 3 ultimate abilities in 10 seconds, then used a basic and are full adrenaline.
Does this seem overpowered at all?
Wildly. And so you're at this point,
but
you're still going
to be
critting.
But you're giving something up, right? Because you're investing heavily into these arrows and a switch to make this work.
I mean, the setup for the scenario I'm discussing requires Greater Ricochet, yeah. Eldritch Crossbow, yeah. And probably a Hex Hunter. You could probably get away with an Oxbow for this, actually. So really, just those two are the big upgrades.
Right, and I wanted to just bring that back to ground here, because this is something that isn't going to be happening every day, but it can happen for the people who do have all the gear.
What I'm describing is what I believe will be the highest damage output in the game from any source. That is, this is the most power creep. This is the fastest kill method, aside from getting incredibly lucky on Fractured Staff of Armadil, yeah, critical hits. We're not bending on chance for any of this, really. This is average hits. You could get a ton more crits and just be drowning in adrenaline. This will just keep going. So effectively, you just use a ton of extra adrenaline at the start of this to fire off. You know, once I get that Greater Ricochet off, I'm probably going to, you know, it's one of those situations where you're doing like a, you know, Saren Godbow spec if you have it. If not, you know, Snapshot, Tendrils, and then, whatchamacallit, Holy Crow, Darkbow special. Then Greater Ricochet is up again, and you've got another 100% adrenaline. And you can do, and that's probably the last time you get to pull that trick, because then your Natural Instinct and the Incendiary Shot buffs will drop. But you effectively get 10 seconds where you're using only thresholds, only special attacks, and just ridiculous damage output just burst onto a target. Made possible because these arrows gave you the extra 100% adrenaline at the start of this to use Natural Instinct to, like, supercharge this gain.
And you don't think people are sleeping on this one compared to the Splinters?
I think people understand that they get a free Death Swiftness, and then they get to use other abilities. I don't know that people have quite thought about using Incendiary Shot beforehand and Natural Instinct afterwards. I think people will get there, and I'm sure I'm not the only person to come up with it. I think that's the best range rotation to use with these. My estimates for damage on this are through the roof.
Like, oh, yeah, when you're popping that many ultimates, it's got to be, right?
Yeah. Just the adrenaline gain, because effectively you'll get 2 or 3 or 4 Darkbow special attacks on top of your best threshold being used on cooldown. And a quick reminder that every Darkbow special attack under a Death Swiftness in these scenarios is about 20,000 damage. So you're pumping out minutes worth of damage rotation in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Is meta hopping. And then the rest of your rotation is honestly relatively calm. You're using a few thresholds here and there, and you're building adrenaline a ton.
Right.
The other thing to note with this is that Natural Instinct has a 2-minute cooldown. And your adrenaline potion has a 2-minute cooldown. You can only do this every other minute.
Yeah, that's not too bad. That's not too bad in terms of burst.
Remember when I was talking about talking about splinter arrows and how you could stack those on top of other things?
Yeah.
So let's just throw an extra, 27,000 damage that wasn't there before on top of this as well, because we've got these other arrows that we pre-stacked. Combined, this is an incredibly massive buff. You've got a massive adrenaline pool. I'm so excited to use these, and I'm a little concerned that we might have not thought these through all the way and gone a little bit off the chain.
Yeah, that triangle is starting to look a little bit more isosceles rather than equilateral at this point.
Again, we made a good point earlier that there's no great tank option. So you can't, you're much better off tanking on melee and magic than you are on range. I don't know if that matters when you just destroy something that's in front of you, but it's for base tanking roles, range isn't as good. It's like you've got little extra spiky boys on the other sides of that triangle. That's my concern, is that coming into this, I thought it was balanced. We've almost never had a balance change larger than 15 to 20%, and I really think this just shatters that.
Yeah, and my concern is that this comes out and people will get a little too accustomed to it and they got to dial it back, or we're going to be in a greater ricochet situation where it just sits for months.
I want to know, that's my question, though. Will it be egregious enough? Will we ever find an egregious enough anything where they actually have to dial it back on the combat side? Because it usually doesn't matter what it is, it gets incorporated into the game.
It's true. If anything, this strikes me as almost too much. But that said, it's also for an incredibly niche group of people. You mentioned it earlier, Shane.
This is the
scenario
for me.
I'm laying out.
This isn't your everyday PVM.
If I personally want to do this, I don't own an Eldritch crossbow. I have just the limbs. I'm working on it. But I'm doing this with a Wyvern crossbow. I'm doing this with a tier 85. So, that's there's some limiters to this in terms of it's incredibly high price to entry. This is really something that is only going to be used by the highest tier of PVMers.
Yeah.
The really dedicated folks. And it does require, kind of like the other things, it requires that you kind of are really focusing on that rotation. It's going to be hard to do this if you're running around, you can't Death Swift. If you all just burst a target, then there's no point in having an extra 20 seconds of crazy adrenaline gain. You have to kind of build to this.
Is this going to be the baseline, though, for all group encounters?
There's no way, Tim. There's no way. Just from the standpoint that there's no way that in a group of people, standard is that everybody owns these items. There's no chance. This is going to be one of those, people that are really going for speed kills. The people that are in the highest tiers and, are friends with the highest tier people, they'll have this stuff. And the rest of us will still do 100% fine on the gear that we've been using. As evidence, me with bows.
I can answer Tannis's question then and say that no, it won't be dialed back, because if there's a relatively small number of people that can do it, it's not going to have as huge of an impact as if it was everybody. And I know you probably won't like that, Tannis, but I think that's come down at.
It is what it is until someone figures out a way to exploit that somehow. To make obscene money or something like that, and then they make a video about it, and then we'll have a different situation on our hands. I'm glad if it isn't so far out there that it doesn't need that, then great. I mean, that's that's
and
great.
The other thing that here's your doomsday is that you can probably buy a Nox longbow and a Wyvern crossbow and with like using these techniques, outdamage somebody who is fully sweating it out with tier 92s and not using these arrows.
Well, there you go.
So maybe that is your danger. I mean, who could?
Well,
gosh,
we'll have to test this we'll next week.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we will. Oh, I'm so ready.
Okay. Well, I realize we're nearing the end of the program here in terms of the time allotted for this. I'm just going to give you a last word on this, Thaxi. If there's anything this week you want to touch on these arrows briefly before we move on and just address a couple of other little things before we go. You're good? Okay.
Twitter, you had. I've run through my list.
All right.
Thank you.
There's a Steel Series giveaway this week, everybody. If you head on over to the website, it was in this week's news post, you'll go to the Steel Series website, log in or register, get a key, copy a key, and then redeem it on the RuneScape website. You will get 200 rune coins and a bunch of treasure hunter keys and a set of Steel Series steel armor for 100% free. I think it was like 35 treasure hunter keys or something to that effect. And I mean, 200 rune coins, that's nice to get as well. So everybody just go and redeem this, I think. I did it, so everybody else should too. All right, we were going to go through a lot of the patch notes, but I think I'm just going to cover the highlights here. Dwarf cannons, golden cannons, and royal multi-cannons have been converted from four pieces into singular items. Previously, any multi-cannons you had will now be converted on next login. And all the multi-cannon parts are no longer obtainable and can no longer be used. The multi-cannons now also have a tooltip stating their maximum damage. And multi-cannons can be now used on Eagle to initiate the multi-cannon exchange process. And Eagle also has an improved chat flow. And it makes sense that they did this because the Kinetic Cyclone and the Aldak Coil, those were also only one-item ones, but the Dwarf Multicannon, the ranged option, was still a four-piece option. So it was long overdue that they did that. I'm not a cannoner.
Interesting.
I don't know if
interestingly,
you guys are.
No. I have for some things on the completionism grind, like I got my champion scrolls using a lot of cannons.
Right.
I did chompies with I think an old that coil. Might have been a regular cannon. I just logged into game. I'm going to check. Interesting thing was that previously, the upgraded one-piece multi-cannon weighed only 2 kilograms, whereas the original cannon and both of the melee and magic variants weighed 30 kilograms. I'm wondering if my new cannon suddenly weighs 2 kilograms.
Well, let's check that out. You can.
I am doing it now. I will let you know.
These
you
are can... such weird cases. I don't think there's anything else we need to mention in the patch notes this week. They're in the show notes if you want to look at them. But last week we missed that the weekly limit on the Shattered Heart D&D was removed. I stopped doing that ages ago.
What is the Shattered Heart D&D?
That's the stone thing where you get those stones when you're skilling each week.
Oh.
It saves people from having to spend over half a year on it if they want to rush completionism. Yeah. Also, it was not the longest part of my completionism grind.
No, so I can imagine there's more grindy things.
I have an update for you.
All right.
The Oldak Coil and Kinetic Cyclone still weigh 30 kilograms. The Royal Dwarf Multicannon is 20 kilograms. So it's not 2 anymore. Also not 30. Okay.
Weights are so weird in RuneScape. Sure. Strange and golden rocks can now be added to their respective statues directly from the statue collection bag or backpack. And the statue collection bag can now be filled via the bank while it's in the backpack. They also added a bunch of new enhancers to the Motherlode Maw, including the Agile Outfit Enhancer that grants an additional lap of progress towards the Agile Outfit per completed lap, Construction Contract Enhancer that grants 100% extra construction contract credits when completing one. I'd like to have this one.
Mm-hmm.
The Anachronia Base Camp Contract grants a 20% drop chance for building resources across Anachronia. This stacks with, of course, the Roar of Osius. Invention Task Enhancer grants a new task for the tech tree that you last completed a task for, And finally, the Menaphos City Quest Enhancer that grants 100% reputation when completing a city quest.
The issue with these, as with all enhancers, is that they get used up very quickly. So they're not a huge time saver, but if you just hate something, these are nice to have.
Yeah, and I see it as very situational as well.
Of course.
So, and the question is, of course, are you going to get any of these from the mod? Personally, I think in the entire time I've been doing the mod, which has only been a few months now, I think I've only got, you know, two or three enhancers out of everything that comes out of it. But
do it for a few years. They stack up. I had 20 or 30 of them, I think, at one point.
All right.
So, I used them all on Chompies.
All right. There is also something called the Age Appropriate Design Code. And this is in relation to a new piece of UK legislation. So with this, they updated the RuneScape rules, and they're taking it not just in the UK, but of course, game-wide. Now, with this, alterations include regarding appropriate language. They've made the unacceptable behaviors clearer and added some clarification about swearing and cussing, as well as bullying and harassment. That's fine. I think we all expect that.
Mm-hmm.
Added additional context about real-world trading and the associated risks. Okay. Expanded the game is of chance rule to clarify the use of bots and websites/services. And I was thinking that if this was the time you were going to ban games of chance, this would be it. But it didn't happen.
Sand Casino lives on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did I read somewhere that they're contemplating getting rid of the Duel Arena in Old School?
Right. Right.
It would be a great change for the game, but there would be problems.
World War III?
I think.
Yeah, we have pitchforks over here. They would show up with, like, bazookas. Like,
I'm not going to say anything bad about the people who go to the Duel Arena, especially in Old School, because I like my good health. Wild.
Oh, boy. They've listed some common scams, adjusted the staff impersonation rule, clarified information classed as personal details. And here's the big one. Our bug abuse rule has also been tweaked, particularly for players who accidentally discover a bug and worry about getting banned. But there's more. There's more that wasn't here before in this. When it comes to exploiting a bug, players must not take advantage of any bugs they find in the game. If you discover a bug, please report it to Jagex, okay? If you have stumbled across a bug but do not continue to exploit it, we will not ban anyone who discovers a bug in our game. Let us know about it, and then do not use the bug again. We do ban players who continually exploit a bug, particularly if the bug provides an unfair gain or advantage over other players. Now here's one of the new points. If you discover a bug, please don't share the details of it with other players. For example, by sharing information in-game or making a video or similar that explains how to exploit the bug, encouraging other players to abuse a bug, or sharing information about it is treated in the same way as continuing to abuse the bug yourself and can lead to a ban.
We got a rule, Shane. We got a ruling. Whoop whoop.
And of course, we've seen this about the Elite Dungeons exploit. We've seen this about the Oddments exploit that appeared. And it felt like a revolving door. And we needed to get some clarity on that. I'm glad it's here. It's hidden inside this age-appropriate design code post. I don't know that people who it's going to affect are going to read this, but at the end of the age-appropriate design code post, it says, that's it. Like we said, you shouldn't notice any differences. I'm happy about that.
I love it. People thought they were being slick with alts and this and that, and it's not going to happen now. There's a very clear, defiant, sounds clear and defiant to me anyway.
And I wonder if this would have had any impact on the Elite Dungeon stuff.
I don't know. I mean, it's one of those situations, at least for the creator side of things, where larger, kind of more mainstream creators, I think, normally get community is like, hey, be careful. If they post anything, that's be a bug, you know? I think they generally know better. I think this is just for individuals who are like, hey, clan, look at this.
Yeah. Yeah, but there have been cases in multiple fronts where this has happened, so I'm glad we have some clarification on this and things have moved on with this. But I think with that, we can move on to our picks of the week. We were going to mention Grand Exchange value changes, but I think the thing we want to take away from that is that there's a lot of things in there that were specifically being merchanted and being held that were impacting the skilling side of the equation, but have now been tweaked, and it's just a lot less painful to buy certain things, like Primal Pulp, for example, or Spirit Shards.
Free market reigns, Shane.
That's right.
Arrow shafts and like broad arrow pieces.
Yeah, I can buy up to 500 herb seeds now instead of 100 at a time. So that's good.
It seems to me like this is a concerted effort to fix a lot of the merchanting, we'll say, issues in the game, right? Like, they added, I think Spirit Seeds were a great example of this with the last boss, that, like, this is an expensive thing. It's expensive because it's used a lot now, and when they were first introduced into the game, they weren't used a lot. They've been given a use, but not given an additional source. And I think they really seem to be trying to balance out the, like...
Yeah.
The amount people want to trade for something, the amount that's coming into the game versus out of the game, like... picking those really big pain points, and I like that a lot.
And the alternate is, you know, manually adjusting Grand Exchange prices, which no one wants to do. So, all right, well, I'm going to start with the pick of the week, and this is an important one. And I was amazed that this hadn't been talked about on the show before. And I have the Internet Wayback Machine from the Internet Archive. So if you want to see what a page looked like at a certain point in history, all you have to do is pop the URL into the Internet Wayback Machine, and it will allow you to pick, based on a set of calendars, about when you can go back and look at certain pages. And I did this week with the RuneScape Rules page when I was looking at that and preparing for the show on this. And I thought, have we ever done Wayback Machine for his pick of the week before? And no, we haven't. So there we have it. The Internet Wayback Machine, hosted by archive.org. It's a fun website to do, and it goes back a long time. I think you can actually find RSBNB on here going back to like 2005.
And yeah. Don't be a gotcha dick, because we know Shane is offensive. We understand. He's probably said some things in the past.
And it's his
He's grown a lot tonight. Since then.
We all have, honestly. Yeah, I got the RSBNB homepage up here from August 21st, 2004.
Oh, early days.
Anyways, that's my pick of the week. What do you got, Tennis?
Okay, so I got something that I know there's a few of us still left out there in the world. But for the wrestling fans that listen to this podcast, my pick of the week is AEW Dynamite. I know this probably sounds quite a surprise, since one of my picks of the week was the Jim Cornette podcast, and he's usually talking smack about AEW, but yeah, it is a newer wrestling promotion. It's a couple years old now, and they finally got their stuff together, and they have some star power, and have just been having some great matches, putting on shows, 20,000 people in the stands, and then wrestling's becoming fun again. And so, yeah, Wednesday night, I think it's at 8 p.m. Eastern. You can watch AEW Dynamite, and I don't know, it reminds me of the stuff I kind of grew up with, which hasn't been on for a while. It's been kind of, I don't know, it just got all Vince McMahon down.
Yeah, I've always seen wrestling as kind of a choreographed thing, not too realistic. You'd say it's primarily entertainment, yeah?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, now that we're in a time when, you know, everybody's a smart fan, everybody understands that, you know, it's a work, what is, you know, the reason a lot of us watch it is just to see that portrayal. I mean, this is kind of like, I mean, think of it as like Broadway for guys who like to watch fights but don't really want people to get hurt too bad, you know, we just want it to look like it. Yeah, kind of like that.
Okay, that's the funniest yeah. thing I've heard all week.
All right. Well, I can make you laugh, Shane.
All right, Doxy. So yeah,
that's my pick.
Did you decide if you want to do yours, or?
Yeah, I'll go for it. My pick of the week is going to be the new, relatively new, I think it's a couple months old at this point, maybe, is the Ryan Reynolds movie Free Guy.
No, he's a Canadian.
Without spoilers, quick, you know, idea here is the main character is actually an NPC who develops a kind of a consciousness in a game world that is effectively like a Grand Theft Auto MMO. It's got a good wholesome story. It's some really funny video game references, good overall mix of comedy, action, romance, just a good all-rounder. I enjoyed it. Went and saw it with a friend. That's it.
All right, sounds good.
If you're interested, and
if you don't want to spoil it, and it's good to see movies coming back. I think I was wondering if they were gonna go the way of the Dodo with the pandemic, but I see they're coming back, so that's good. All right, let's run through some achievements here. We do have a backlog of 2 weeks. Starting off on the 22nd, we have Jack BLG with 99 attack. Parnassius got 200 million defense XP. Dr. Reggie got 99 construction. Uber Plastic got 99 fire making. Zero Banksy got 99 archaeology. Darkest Knight got 99 construction on the 20th. Tanny Kiat got 99 smithing. Thieves got 200 million attack XP on the 19th. Up the Iron 05 also got 120 invention on the 19th. And on the 18th, we have Lazy Colonel with 99 woodcutting and Thieves again with 200 million agility XP. Wow. Then Spy Who Man with 99 strength and 99 attack on the 17th.
On September 16th, we had Uber Plastic with 99 Herblore. On the 15th, we had Rolladude 540 with 120 Herblore. On the 14th, we had Jade Gizmo with 120 fire making and Vivian with 99 fishing. On the 13th, we had Osasian with 99 mining and Shamrock Soup with 99 archaeology. On September 12th, that would be my birthday, also had Almost Evil with 99 archaeology, Dr. Reggie with 99 herblore, Queen RuPaul with 99 constitution and 99 magic, Questar Awesome with 120 herblore, Vapor 13579 with both 99 crafting and 99 fletching.
Nicely done, and happy birthday.
Very nice. All right. So then on the 11th, we have Jack BLG with 99 strength. We have Merryweather with 120 herblore. We have Quest Kitty with 99 attack and defense and strength. And then we have Jack BLG with 99 magic on September 10th, and Nithrios with 99 prayer on the 10th, Nithrios with 99 defense on the 10th, Vivian with 99 prayer all on the 10th, Queen RuPaul with 99 prayer on the 9th, Quest Kitty with 99 ranged and crafting, both on the 9th. And Vapor 13579 with 99 constitution on the 9th.
Nicely done, everyone. 200 mils, a birthday, 120s, the worst.
Lots to celebrate.
Yep, indeed. What have we been up to on RS? Let's go with you, Tanis. I feel like it's been ages since we talked about this.
So, I mean, I did my little endeavor into Arch Glacier, and then I went right back to skilling, where I belong. So I can't wait till next week because maybe I will be long in a boss fight finally. But I've been working on mining. It was one of my lower gathering skills. I've gotten to a point where I have a lot more 120s than skills that aren't. So I'm like probably over halfway there to 120 all.
Wow.
So I decided to work on mining for right now, and then switching back and forth. I had to go gather energy for more porters. Love the new porters, by the way. They were worth it.
Oh,
I wasn't
okay.
sure at first, but they were totally worth it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
All right, sounds good. How about you, Thaxi?
I've been busy with work. Mostly I've been logging in to do dailies, and honestly this week I've been logging in to check the numbers when I'm wearing different equipment and to like see if puncture can activate poison and do a handful of other testing things. Things that I have done this week, I did I'm putting my money where my mouth is here. I put my Saren God bow into an EOF at the last front. A little sad about with the new arrows because I love bows. I was a little worried about doing it, and now I have some regrets, but it's fine. So this week I bought and perked myself a Noxious Longbow, and I made a new set of tank armor perks to go on the new tank armor. So I'm all good for that. Won't get merched on stuff for those. Yeah, it's been a lot of just like doing math and getting ready and theory crafting and work.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, as for me this week, my adventures into Yak Track completed the Yak Track. I still do enjoy those, even though this one was a bit different than the last one. This one had a lot more PVM in it. Whenever a Marks of War task came up, I did PVM. I went back to Carapac. I went back to the Glacier.
None of us.
Even visited the Dagonoth Kings for a Reaper task. Tannis is just scratching his head right now, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm like, what is
and then,
who is this person?
And then one night, just for fun, I went and sat at Vindicta for about an hour and a half and got the Gorvek pet at 113 kills.
Oh,
because of course he did.
We do have a free death week next week. We didn't mention it, but
yeah,
no deaths on the boss, but we do have a free death week.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to do with that is I am going to probably force myself into hard mode at the Glacier, because I've only done a few kills on that.
Got this, buddy.
Yeah.
You, my friend, need to go down. Try Telos. If you can do the Arch Glacier, you can do Telos.
Right.
You can do it, Shane. You should try
right.
it.
All right, we'll work that into free week then, perhaps next week.
Especially below 50%. If you can pull off a Raxor, you'll be great, my guy.
Yeah, and that's actually something else as well. Whenever a Raxor comes up in the Reaper chest, that's no sweat at this point. I never thought I'd say that, but that's surprising. And people,
so you'll
from,
be making your own bow.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know that we're gonna have enough time between then to get the extra two leg pieces that I need. So
you could get so lucky. You don't know. Rax is fickle.
Yeah. But in any case, that's it for this episode of RSB&B Update. If you guys want full episodes, you can check the show notes out at update.rsbnb.com. You can also subscribe on any podcast listener out there. We're on Google, Spotify, Apple, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and even Amazon now. On your favorite Amazon device that talks to you and listens to you, you can now listen to RSBNB Update. But we're also on YouTube, of course. You'll find the nibbles there, little bits and pieces of the show we put out each and every week. If you like the show, give us a like, give us a subscribe there. It helps the channel out. And leave us a review if your favorite podcast listener supports those, because that helps as well. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.
See ya.